Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
A new equation for switching on outcomes is here from PwC. It's human-led and tech-powered. It's PwC with Oracle, SAP, Salesforce, and Workday. It's PwC with Microsoft, AWS, and Google. Simplify your systems and amplify your results. Switch on outcomes with PwC and their alliances. Learn more at pwc.com.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Kyle, Kathleen, and Jimmy. Today we're going to be covering Season 7, Episode 6 of the CW show The 100, entitled Nikara. And guys, this one had a couple of highs and a couple of lows.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Brian. You know, we always post on Bingetown TV Twitter account. You know, we want to know what you guys think of the episode. So I actually didn't get a chance to post it last night, but we still got a good amount of votes, enough to talk to you guys about it today. We had awesome, pretty good, and good at times, bad at others. You know, and that personally would have been my vote, but we had 40% of our fans said awesome, 33% said pretty good, 14% said good at times and bad at others, and 13% said eh.
I would say that was, well, the general vibe of this table specifically is that it was an episode of highs and lows.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of stuff to like and latch onto, and there was a lot of stuff that I think we are going to rip to shreds today.
Shout out my pretty good gang, though.
Oh, Represent. Yeah, pretty good. I said good at times, bad at others. This was one of the corniest this season for sure. It felt like a couple CW lines, like Nyla randomly saying, like,
back
he's pretty
back.
Cool, huh? Yeah. And I'm like, no. Yeah. But, I mean, the season's really good, but this one felt filler.
Yeah, but I will say...
The first five were almost perfect.
Well,
to me,
yeah.
So.
One of my favorite moments of the entire season is in this episode, so that's probably why I was pretty good.
I completely retweet that, and I know we're going to cover the crap out of that later. I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, boy!
He went for it. I love it. But we started off with a high point, and Jason agreed it was one of his favorite scenes of the series, he said, right?
Yeah, he's saying of all time, the first 5 minutes of this, which is the Dioza stuff, is some of his favorites. And I agree. It also feels different. That music, I feel like they've been using a lot of actual music, and I know like Radioactive has been a theme.
Yeah.
But for me, when I think of The 100, I don't think of actual music in the background.
When is the last time they've used Radioactive?
They've only used it in the beginning,
I'm saying. Only early
Right,
on.
But I'm saying, like, oh, okay, when I think of the show, like, I have shows where I specifically listen or watch, and I'm like, the music is awesome in the show. The 100 is not one of them. But they've used Radioactive 3 times.
They use it very well and artistically and obviously sparingly. One scene sticks out to me was Murphy when he was in the lighthouse by himself, and he was listening to records, and he was just, like, kind of doing his
thing. Spinning out.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Just...
We've mentioned that Murphy in the lighthouse multiple times in the past, whatever, 4 or 6
episodes. That's because we're a good podcast.
And we love Murphy. We'll talk about Murphy.
All of the above.
Yeah. Absolutely. Exactly. But yeah, so this first scene was Dioza to a backdrop of, you know, kind of like a, I don't even know what genre song, like a alternative rock song. Yeah. And she's just like kicking ass in Bardo. It's showing how she got... captured by them, and essentially they were trying to take her memory, and she, being as resilient and badass as she is, did not let them do it. They said she was actually using pain to block them from stealing her memories, and there's like a little needle that gets inserted in the back of her neck, and she was just repeatedly stabbing herself with that needle while she was restrained.
It's her temple, isn't it?
Was it?
I don't know.
I thought it was her temple.
Okay, there you go.
Either way.
Yeah, that's her Navy SEAL training.
I was going to say, she's trained for that, man.
She's such a badass. She honestly, I hate to say it, but she put Octavia to shame in this opening sequence.
She did, and the scene with her tricking him, like grabbing his neck with her teeth and pulling it out, like she actually had to have done that, right? Like grab
like
his neck skin.
Yeah.
Like unbelievable. And also the fact that she takes the spoon and cleans it off first to get the eyeball out. And I'm like,
Badass. Absolutely
insane. Like blood still in her mouth, most likely. Just crazy.
I've been wondering since we first got introduced to Dioza two seasons ago, like what their original plans for her were, and if she was one of those characters that they just couldn't kill off because she was just so good. And I think like she was very hateable when we were first introduced to her. And at this point, she's one of my favorite characters.
Agreed.
I'll say that about a lot of characters, but I really have enjoyed Dioza, especially this season and last season.
Well, it's funny you say that because this is only the second episode Dioza's actually in. Like, we've been dying to know where she is.
Mm-hmm.
Leading into this, it's like, okay, Maddie hasn't been around, but that wasn't really a question. Where's Dioza? Where'd she go? Where's Bellamy? And where's Gaia? Now we still don't know where Bellamy and Gaia are, but finally the Dioza is like, okay, where did they put her? But one problematic thing I thought about this opening is, why did you throw the eyeball on the ground? Like, you don't know how many doors
just
are
reckless.
Coming up. Like, just
yeah.
one,
especially what she does
trail.
At the end of the episode. Like, what she does at the end of the episode. Versus how the recklessness in the beginning doesn't match up.
Yeah, I'm like, get that eyeball.
She was feeling herself.
Yeah, I know. You might need it, though. I don't know.
Yeah. So, the scenes that we get in Bardo kind of, they don't span that long of a time range. They kind of flow together. Obviously, there's other scenes in the other settings of the show in between. But the next scene is still Dioza by herself. Essentially assuming the identity of a disciple. She stole the guard's uniform and is just walking through the hallways, and she gets recognized by three fully decked out Bardoans or disciples.
One of them, they kind of make her arch nemesis.
Right.
Which I liked a lot. That was funny.
Yeah.
When she starts counting out.
She
the
was
ones
counting the strikes.
Well, I really liked the reunion between her and Hope. Just the, like Dioza sprinting at Hope after she throws the knife. First of all, Jimmy, literally, we all watched it together, and Dioza stabs somebody, and then Jimmy goes, throw that knife, baby, and
throw
she just
that
threw
knife,
that knife,
baby.
Right, yep. And it was perfect.
That was sick.
I knew it was coming.
So I need that reunion, like, for my heart and for my soul, and I'm glad they're together. I think we're going to get an actual, better, heartfelt reunion when they're not so panicked and need to get somewhere, but Dioza sprinting at Hope was awesome. I was like, she's going to jump up and drop kick her with both feet.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is epic.
Complete attitude change, too. I mean, she was on, an adrenaline high,
just
killing people constantly.
Right.
And then just, like, seeing Hope's face.
Have we ever seen an example of Dioza's, like, fighting abilities like we saw in this episode?
She was pregnant, so.
Yeah, not really in that context. I mean.
Shit, that's a good point.
She was looking like Octavia-esque. Like, there was. You know, it's crazy. They hyped the disciples up as, like,
warriors,
very trained warriors, and I feel like they've been pushovers. Like, Bellamy's been able to take out a few, and he's not trained officially. Octavia took out, like, 10 or so.
Me and Brian are on the same page here.
I
had to
I
get
talked,
corrected.
I
yeah, I got
down
corrected.
Last
apparently,
night.
When they were up in space, you can finish.
Well, I was going to say, up in space, all they did was train.
Echo trained
all
fight.
Of them in fighting. That's why Octavia literally says, you fight like Asgata. Octavia says that.
Yeah, I feel that, but these people, okay, you assume a 20-year-old disciple who their whole thing is their entire lives are being trained
in
warriorship.
Oh, I totally agree that
yeah.
they should
be.
I don't think they should be so easily be able to be taken on, like, 4v1.
Oh, 100%.
Maybe by Dioza and Octavia, but, like, Bellamy should not be able to handle more than one.
I agree with that.
That's where I'm at, personally, and I don't know. I feel like I've been okay with some of the plot holes that you guys are not okay with. This is the one that's sticking with me, though,
sure,
and I'll die on this hill, I guess.
One way to maybe explain it is, who tells us that they're all warriors? Orlando.
Yeah.
And Orlando is a very devout disciple, and I think maybe, like, they're all warriors for the shepherd. Like, they all live and fight for the shepherd, but maybe they're not all, like,
so you're
warriors.
Saying it could be a metaphor.
Yeah.
He's using it as
like
a metaphor.
How they live their lives.
Do you guys
maybe.
Think that you could become warriors? Like, I...
Yeah. With enough training? Yeah.
Dude, Orlando
I was in space for
definitely...
6 years.
Jimmy is like a karate champion, but like me, I don't know. I think I would just be like, ugh. Like, I don't blood. Think I could.
You don't think you could be a warrior?
Kathleen's making faces over here that our listeners cannot see.
I would love to be a warrior.
Okay,
but
well,
I
let's,
think I'm a big
let's play the hypothetical game. The four of us are trapped on a spaceship for 6 years. Jimmy is our trainer equivalent. That Echo would have been to Bellamy. You know, you don't think. You,
I would
Kyle,
so.
And myself
I really
could
would.
Learn how to handle ourselves?
Oh, I believe you
I
two could
mold
definitely
you guys.
Learn how to
tight you.
We'd literally be like third degree black belts by the
damn
time
right.
we get out. Well, that's anyway.
Anyway, I think it's funny that. I mean, so you said you liked the reunion.
Yeah, yeah, this is what I wanted
I
to say.
I was on
into.
The other side because I didn't. I thought the scene fell completely flat. Thought it should have felt very emotional, but for me, it just, they didn't react the way that I thought they would in terms of like what they were saying. Obviously, Dioza is in a little bit of shock. She hasn't seen Hope since she was a child, and now Hope's a grown woman.
Yeah.
And Octavia obviously isn't feeling great because Bellamy's now dead, quote unquote dead.
And she's just been like mind tortured for.
Yeah. And then Dioza even kind of feels the tension and the weirdness and looks at Echo and is like, what's up with her? Bellamy's dead. It just, I don't know. For me, it just. I didn't like it.
I totally agree, but I think this is one of those moments where we're going to get it in another episode.
Yeah.
Like they just didn't have enough time this 100%. Episode to deal with it. Yeah. Kind of like the Clark and Raven stuff. We wanted what we got this episode, we thought maybe we were going to get last episode or the episode before.
That's a good point.
After
yeah.
Raven
I,
did
like,
this bad thing.
I have in my notes, I just said that Echo and Bellamy's death kind of ruining the mood of the scene.
Echo is dead inside.
Yeah.
She has really nothing but behind those eyeballs. She's got nothing.
I'm surprised at how quick they are to believe that Bellamy's, like, dead. He's obviously not dead, but they're all just like,
don't they
know
that Bob Morley signed on for, like, enough episodes?
You would think that Echo would know that.
Don't you think that?
But anyway, personally, I like the reunion. I'm with you, Kathleen. I think, like, they were crunched by the time of their circumstances. Like, they had to deal with escaping Bardo. I don't even think they were expecting to run into Dioza. So they were surprised by that. And then they said, okay, we got to get out of here. Like, you're with us now. So
I think if anything, Hope's reaction should have been a little better. It's been 20 years for her. For Dioza, it's been 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean,
fuck, that's a good point.
Yeah. And also, again, like you said, at first, Dioza's got to realize it's Hope.
Yeah.
You know, Hope should have known, or I guess did know, but should have gave some kind of, you know, facial, you know, something right away. Like, oh, there's mom, you know? But
I mean,
still,
her mom also
still
did just throw a knife into her face.
Right,
that's
yeah. true.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
I told her to throw it.
I really liked the scene, honestly. Yeah,
I liked the knife throw. It was
it
just the emotions of the scene fell flat for me. I feel like I didn't feel it. I wasn't getting goosebumps,
this
chills, none of that.
This episode, they definitely weren't trying to focus on the Bardo gang. I feel like they allocated a very limited bit of time for these scenes in Bardo, and I think I like the scene. But moving right along, the next time we see them is them trying to get into the room that supposedly holds the anomaly stone because they're trying to escape, and they run into who else but Levitt dressed as a janitor.
Conveniently.
Dude, I started cracking up. He's just standing there quietly just mopping the floor while they're like trying to make this big decision. I just thought that was hilarious.
At the exact right place. Exact right
Very
time.
Very suspicious.
What are you trying to say here, Jimmy? Are you trying to accuse Levitt of something?
Listen, I said I was going to marry the guy last week, so.
Yeah, it's either lazy writing or, and like, I think there's a bunch of conveniences which we'll get to, like the anomaly stone just so happened to be in the stomach of this rock creature thing right when they needed it.
Don't
like,
even get me started on
right.
that.
Right, so there's a bunch of conveniences and it's more of, okay, is this the CW kind of just being a little loosey-goosey with this, or is it, if anyone wants to jump in, with Levitt actually being bad?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's serious credence to the fact that he could be bad, because you think about it, he is essentially one of the top psychological,
Tutor.
I don't even know what to say, masters,
yeah.
for lack of a terrible term, yeah, but he knows how to manipulate people's psychologies. That's what he does. That's his role in the society. And he could very easily do that to Octavia. I mean, he turned very quickly. It was 12 days. I mean, granted, he watches a large majority of her life, but
he's so
one
right
crew.
Yeah, my gosh.
From the get.
We were loving him, man.
Which is cool.
We said
but
he was us. I would never turn on them.
Well, you know, it's funny because we're kind of like thinking about it as, why would he help Octavia so fast? We were like, he he's looking at her live. He's us. We're watching him. But now we're like, yep. He's back.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He knows, I guess this could go both ways. He knows so much about the disciple lifestyle. He knows everything you can know. He even says that out loud. So, like, do you trust his knowledge, yeah, or is he so hardcore disciples
so
that he would do whatever it takes for them?
I just want to clarify, you three believe that Levitt is playing double agent and is, to his core, on Team Bardo.
I think
I don't
that
want
there's
him to
a
be,
possibility.
But
yes
I,
or no, you believe that?
Okay, the only reason I want to believe that is because I'm mad that Gabriel turned at the end, and if Levitt is actually bad, it redeems Gabriel.
Right, and when you say turn, you mean looks right at him, like, oh, well, he's getting ready to run away, right? He gives him, like, a second glance, or are you talking about the actual
I'm
turns
like,
so, on them
so
at the
that
very end?
That happens in this, and then he...
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm saying,
the glance is curious.
Yeah.
The glance alludes
the glance
to the
alludes,
fact that he's
exactly
going to distrust Levitt later. For the record, I think that Levitt is a total Octavia simp. I think that he loves what he saw in, like, the memory drive, and I think he's on team... I think he's a good guy.
Yeah. You
personally,
know, it's so
that
easy
could blow up in my face,
it's,
but I love
Levitt.
Why
wouldn't we think that? Because Dev turned fast, Orlando turned fast. You know, they love
that's
these
a
people.
Really good point.
That's
allegedly on Orlando.
Yeah, I mean, how
Orlando's
strong
so
is this fucking disciple lifestyle? If all these fucking simps are just out here simping for fucking Hope and Octavia,
I
for
mean,
all
objectively,
our girls.
Think about it. We've described this Bardo culture as a cult. If you take a step back and look at what they're preaching there, even if you were raised in it, it's not an enjoyable society. You're told what to do, how to live, where to be, and when. And if this guy Levitt gets to see the point of view of someone just living their life on Earth and doing crazy stuff like Octavia was, I think he would be behind that and support that and try to help her cause and her people's cause.
He quivered when she touched his face.
Yeah. Wouldn't you quiver when
Octavia
touched
your
face?
The sexual tension was real. Even if his intentions
right
are to fuck them over, the sexual tension was real.
I think Levitt is,
I'm 100% on team that him and Anders were just playing Octavia in the room.
Yeah.
Where, like, Anders is like, rack it up. And he's like, no, it's going to hurt her. All
it's
that
like
shit.
Every trope of, I am going into this thing to play you, but I fell in love with you.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Right.
I don't want that at all.
Yeah.
I just don't want there to be a double agent reveal. Yeah. I want Levitt to be just on Octavia's side from the get-go. I'd rather have
them
to end
that
up together because I think Levitt would be good for Octavia.
Yeah. I'd rather have,
that's me,
like, some backstory of Levitt, like, questioning the lifestyle and, like, the actions of people at the top as he learns more, and then Octavia being the final straw more than him going into the room being hardcore Bardo and then seeing Octavia and being like, oh my god, look at this goddess, you know? I don't want that.
So, to get back to the actual scene, when they see Levitt, they're about to go into the anomaly stone room, for lack of a better word, and Octavia recognizes him, and he tells them that there's a dozen disciples waiting for them inside that will lay down their lives to try and stop them, and that they should go out through the oxygen farm, which we've seen in previous episodes, and go out through, you know, a door in the corner that will take them out to the planet's surface. And he said that you won't be followed because it is not survivable out there, but he says, for long, you'll be able to survive for a little bit.
But doesn't give anything else.
Yeah, like, where would they go? What would they do?
They're crunched for time. Our boys figure it out. The homies figure it out.
I mean, if anyone's going to figure it out, Gabriel's going to figure it out.
I believe
but
Levitt's exact words were, it's survivable for you longer than it would be you staying indoors on Bardo. Like, you have a better chance fighting the elements out on the planet than staying here with thousands of disciples swarming onto your position. Like, you're going to die if you stay here. You got to get out. That's what I thought of it as.
I mean, I'm just going to jump right back to what Jimmy just said. That if anyone's going to figure it out, it's Gabriel's going to figure it out. But did Gabriel figure out that Levitt is a bad guy?
Right. He wasn't even he didn't want to risk it, you know? So if Gabriel's not willing to risk it, it might be on Gabriel's side.
I mean, he clearly
there
didn't trust Levitt.
Well, this also goes back to the fact that the point I made last week, why didn't Gabriel know about Levitt? Why? That's such a weird thing to me. They're alone on a planet for 5 years, and Hope has this knowledge of Levitt and only tells Echo and not Gabriel. It's weird. If I'm Echo, I'm trusting Levitt from what Hope says, but Gabriel will have I mean, maybe it's best that Gabriel didn't know because now he's second guessing it.
See, now you're having me second guessing what I put down on Levitt, because if my boy Gabriel doesn't trust him, he's the smartest guy on the show.
That's the note I have. Is Levitt bad? Question mark. Why would Gabriel do this?
Oh, you're so right, because I know in my heart, in my soul, that Gabriel is not bad.
Yeah,
know
exactly.
We know that.
He is the pure goodness of this show. So is Levitt bad? Man.
We just turned
and also, I don't really understand Echo's insult to him, Gabriel, this is, when he says we can't go out there because we don't know or whatever. And she goes, he just wants his answers.
Right, so she's trying to say, like, they want to survive. He just wants to be in that, in Bardo, to learn what he's been trying to learn forever.
Okay, yeah. Right. So I'm thinking, like, he could find out some answers out fucking side.
Yeah, like, he doesn't care about them. He cares about his knowledge of what he, like, what he's been looking for so long.
The first watch through, I was furious with... We should probably get to that scene before we like dissecting it. So to conclude this scene, Levitt's a janitor. He has a moment with Octavia where he says it was all worth it to have met you and to see life through your eyes. And then he says, now punch me and run. So it looks like she overpowered him. She rocks him.
But he likes getting hit by Octavia.
A gentle, like, you know, brush of the cheek. They have a nice moment. And then they like sprint away. Everyone except for Gabriel, who has, like, a lasting glance at Levitt, and Echo says, Gabriel, come on, and then he kind of, you know, goes Files. With the group. Which takes us to the final scene that we get in Bardo. They're about to enter the oxygen farm, which is essentially just a giant forest that they have, and they run into an old man on his way back, unfortunately, from picking flowers.
Bringing his wife some flowers,
yeah,
man.
Boy, what a crew to run into.
And to jump quickly back to a point with the Warrior Society, is this man no longer a warrior, or is he considered, is he lumped into, this is a warrior society, everyone's a warrior?
How many symbols did he have on his face? Let's go back.
This guy was not a warrior.
So I saw, like, I did look at a picture, and it's, like, faded, you know, because he's older, I guess. Not that I know what that means.
He's retired.
But
he's not important enough to get him redone.
Yeah, right?
I don't know. But, okay, so who says Levitt? Which one of them say Levitt?
It is Octavia says Levitt.
So Octavia says I loved this part, so because it's just like they're all on the same page. Octavia says Levitt. Echo just stabs him and kills him. And then Gabriel's like, what the actual fuck? And Dio's is like, said his name. Yeah. Said Levitt's name.
Yeah, Dio's called on right away. I loved it.
I just like, because...
They had no intention of killing the old guy. Dioza, oh my gosh, her face, she just puts her hand on his shoulder and says, no need to worry. Like, we don't want to hurt you. How do we get to the surface? And the guy's just like, whoa, what did I just stumble upon? You go out through the door, go up there, but you're not going to survive without these rebreathers. And they ask about rebreathers, and essentially Octavia gets to the point where she says, I trust Levitt, let's just do it, and he gets stabbed immediately. And I do like what you just said. Dioza picks up immediately. He had to go. She said Levitt. We could still need Levitt.
Because me, not a warrior and not, like, looking into that stuff, I was like, damn, why did she just kill him so fast? He's just a sweet old man. So I liked that part.
I'll train you.
I do want to add one last thing. Not last thing, but... So, Hope's helmet looks at Dioza and there's no information, which is interesting because you get a shot of behind the helmet looking at Dioza. Usually when it looks at somebody, it's got Clark, very important, whatever. Nothing for Dioza, meaning she probably didn't crack at all in the MCAP.
Yeah, that's a good point, because why should give us 2 seconds of Hope's view of her if they're not gonna, it's not gonna mean anything. And then I guess I'll say one more thing, going back to Levitt's a bad guy, is that he manipulates psychology. It's what he does. He's a janitor, mopping the hall.
It's what he does.
Bellamy was a janitor. Subconsciously playing at Octavia, getting her to kind of weaken her heart.
I like that.
Yeah, get into her a little bit. Possible.
I think they're doing all those kind of small things to try and draw parallels.
I think so.
I like it. Season 7, you got to do it.
Last season. Good point.
I like it.
So I just thought the obvious explanation for him being a janitor was like he's getting punished for letting Octavia escape.
That's what you would think.
Why not go to penance?
Okay, you guys are saying that's just the obvious charade.
Yeah, of course.
If he's going to get punished, they could just send him to penance. It's a weekend.
Right, it wasn't that bad what he did. He just got overpowered by a girl.
I mean, he let them leave.
Yeah, but they don't know he let them leave.
I just want to say on the podcast that Luke is also here, just not mic'd up, and is reacting to everything we're saying. So
how do they not have fucking cameras? These guys fucking power their suits by their thoughts. They don't have cameras in the stone room.
That's a fair point, Kyle. I will lend you that.
So, Gabriel...
Maybe they do, and they watch the whole time.
It was all planned, because Levitt's a bad guy.
Gabriel betrays our crew, right? And he does this insane, like, blue laser to bump all these people
down. He stuns
them,
yeah.
And then my immediate brain goes, okay, Dioza beat up 18 people, and none of them could have just lasered her down? Anyway, next.
She would just dodge it.
Yeah,
true. So, yeah, she dodges the electrical wave.
Let me just say one more thing, is that me, Jimmy, Brian, and Luke watched together last night. And
For the record, I didn't get the invite.
And so I think I'm more prone to call out plot holes and things that maybe are corny when I'm surrounded by people rather than when I'm watching it just by myself and then I do the second watch because I love The 100. I don't care if it's corny or not. I'm obsessed with it. But the fact that my boys are sitting next to me, I'm like, I have to just call every single solitary thing out that doesn't make any sense to me. So
to impress us?
To impress you guys, of course. But anyway.
Yeah, so Gabriel, quote-unquote, betrays them, but he has a good reason. He says, like, this guy just said we're not going to be able to survive out there. I don't trust your guy, Levitt. Like, the risk is us dying. I think getting captured is a better option than risking dying, which...
That's a terrible decision to make.
It's reasonable, though.
Yeah.
You know, I think Gabriel weighed the options. He just said, death is not an option. That cannot be on the table. There's too much at stake. We got to just swallow this pill. And I think the show didn't allow them to get off Bardo at this second because I think they're going to reconvene with Bellamy on Bardo. I think that's what it's going to be, maybe, somehow. Although I guess he did just go through a portal.
Yeah.
So scrap that. That was
I think Bardo being on Bardo is where the final showdown
that makes
is
a
going
lot of
to
sense.
Be, I think.
Yeah.
So you're right.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, they'll be captured.
Oh, I thought the Bardo... I always thought the Bardoans were going to wind up on Sanctum. That's what I was...
Disciples.
Final showdown.
Okay, only because that's where all the rest of the humans are, you mean? Is that what?
Well, just because I don't think the Sanctum people would take the fight to Bardo. Like, they have the shield at Sanctum. Like, you know what I mean?
It's
like,
interesting. Could go either way, honestly.
Once they get the information of what Bardo is, they're going to realize they're heavily outmatched. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's where I'm at. But that... Any other thoughts for the Bardo scene of this episode?
I'm all thought out.
Boy, and we thought that was going to be a quick one.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Love it's bad.
Love it's bad. Orlando's alive.
There you have it. So anyway, our first scene in Sanctum is where we're going. Is going to be Indra, who is walking with Maddie, and Maddie is discussing or expressing that she's a little bit worried about Clark and Gaia. Indra is kind of talking her down. In a conversation with one of the One Crew guards, we find out that the 50 guns that Indra and company have procured from kind of just the surroundings of Sanctum have been stolen. They don't know where they are. And then Indra looks up, and who's out of his cell... But our friend Russell, aka Shade Hader. Let's just call him Russ Hader.
I think
that's the best
name.
Yeah, we're
going to
call him Russ Hader.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Say it.
I was going to say he thought of that on the spot.
No, I didn't. I absolutely didn't.
No, I'm just kidding.
Absolutely didn't. It's a very logical way to get. What else are you going to call him?
It is. Too true.
Shadesel? Jadesel. Just flip it around.
If you want to call him Shadesel, Kyle, I'm not going to stop.
I think I'm in. Yeah, Nikki Bang Bang stole the guns. We knew it. We know it now. She stole the guns.
Yeah, so anyway, like...
I didn't mean to jump the gun.
You totally did, though.
Yeah, you did. But anyway, Indra... So, Russell's out of his cell. Apparently, they've been allowing him, like, 15 minutes out of his cell per day.
Yeah, like, 10 minutes twice a day or something. Was that what they said?
Yeah, which seems ridiculous to me. But then Indra goes out, snuffs it out right away. She learns that the guard that was guarding him was, like, talking to him and essentially just lays down the law and reassigns the guard, said he's not allowed out of his cell anymore, nobody's to talk to him. And she didn't say, I loved this line, she says, from now on, only Tree Crew guards the prisoner. She didn't say One Crew,
right.
She said only Tree Crew. We need people that we trust on this guy.
Well, I was going to say, it's honestly ballsy in general to have any of the grounders be a guard, because why wouldn't Russ Hayda just immediately be like, slam in, ground or speak, and be like, I'm Shade Hayda, what's up? Let's, like, you're on my side.
I don't think he's ready to show his full hand like that yet. And he knows that Sangeeta crew is probably the only ones that's going to be fully sympathetic to his cause at this point. And that's why she said Tree Crew, because I think she knows that Tree Crew would be, knows that he's no good.
Yeah. He also knows that he has time. He's not going to get burned to the stake immediately. Exactly. He knows they had to figure some shit out between the Sanctumites, the Children of Gabriel, the prisoners, there's a lot of shit going on, so he knows that he has time to figure some shit out for himself.
It's funny, though, because Shade Hayda is merely a man right now. Like, he's a commander, he has the knowledge of the commanders, which is something that a line I liked is, a claim only three of us can make, which is what he said. Well, I really liked that, obviously, Maddie Clark and himself. But he's just a man, and for some reason, in my head, it seems more supernatural or, like, more of a big bad, but he is just a guy with some knowledge, right?
Just a guy kicks some fucking ass, dude.
That was a beatdown.
Clark did have the flame, but she was never a commander. Yeah. Maddie had the flame.
She was under his thumb the whole time, basically.
She wasn't a commander in the sense that, like, Alexa was the commander. Shade Hayda, in his heyday, was a commander. And we saw when he fights in a later scene that he's got the chops to be a commander. He's got, you have to assume, like, the mental know-how. I mean, he's been under lockdown 24/7, and he already knows everything that's going on in Sanctum. Mm-hmm. Russ Hayda is becoming one of my most interesting characters to follow.
We say it every week. J.R. Bourne, man. Props.
Yeah, yeah. Great actor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But to continue with this scene, Indra gets him one-on-one and says, the moment you stop being useful, I'll kill you myself. And he calls her bluff. He says, no, you're not going to kill me. You can't kill me now. He acknowledges that, you know, one crew is split. And like you said, only three people have the claim to have ever worn the flame. And Indra, I can see right through you. You're worried that they're going to follow me, not Clark and not Maddie. And Indra is insecure about that, you know, because like I just said, you know, I think Shade Hayda has a very legitimate claim to that spot as the leader of one crew.
Thoughts? Fuck 'em. That's my thought. Fuck 'em.
But yeah, he says Indra should be scared. The next scene that we have in Sanctum is Murphy in the saloon, and he's actually talking to the father of the little boy that he saved. Was it last episode? Mm-hmm. Two episodes?
Yeah, last episode.
From being burned alive. I loved that Murphy did that, by the way. I'm not sure if that got covered in the last episode. He has a nice little back and forth with him where he says his name is Jeremiah. And he says, why don't we go with Jerry? All right, Jer?
Yeah, he turns right around.
Yeah, Indra comes up and he says, yeah, why don't you let the adults talk, Jer?
I read a little note that just said Richard Harmon is amazing.
He really is. I mean, he steals every scene.
Yeah,
he
has such good little mannerisms as Murphy that it's just, he encompasses the character so fucking well.
You know, I'm sure he would like to be on Bardo or on these other fun, crazy storylines, but he is killing it on Sanctum when they're not giving him very much. He could just deliver the few lines he has.
Him and Amori are just like the fucking peanut gallery playing off everybody else that's going
on.
They've been such a great comic relief. What have you been saying since like the first episode? They're like the best love story.
Oh, the greatest love story of our time.
Yeah.
I love to watch their love.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
100 to each other. Just full in. Favorite people.
But yeah,
also, thing that I love is the little bar that they have on Sanctum. I love that little bar that they all hang in and drink the Joe juice and shit. Yeah, I just love that they all sit in there and chill and drink.
I've affectionately referred to it as the saloon, you know?
Okay,
it's just,
I like
it's
that.
It's just their spot. Yeah, it's the saloon. But anyway, so Indra rolls up and asks Murphy for help locating these guns. And he says, what do you know about that prisoner Hatch and his girlfriend? He has some good words for Hatch. He says, you know, machine gun Annie and Hatch. What did he say? Hatch liked the money. Nikki liked the chaos. And Hatch is gone now. So they have this woman who likes the chaos and just had her husband taken from her. So he said, if Nikki has the guns, then we have a big problem.
Yeah. So when they confront Nikki about it, Indra wasn't there. So Indra doesn't know how bad we screwed over Hatch and we really did. Nikki wants none of it. But Murphy knows. The minute she's like, you have a blood alteration, he's like, I'm going to just maybe like, you're right. He's like, yep. Hatch was a good man.
Yeah.
Like,
Hatch
was
a good man.
He was a good man. But Nikki's like, fuck off. I want revenge. I want my husband back.
Nikki doesn't know how it goes with our the 100 people. You know, people die when they get close to any of the
group. Well, that's exactly Raven's line later when Clark says, the people we killed were to save the people we love. And she says, well, they loved people too. And that is an amazing example. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Nikki and Hatch. We killed Hatch. Hatch loved Nikki. Nikki loved Hatch.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
And then Nikki has quite possibly the best written line of the entire series, where she says, tell Raven I said bang, bang.
Bang, bang.
So, you just delivered that so well.
Which allegedly, we read on Twitter in the old script was supposed to be, Nikki says, pew, pew.
Oh, my God.
The worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Thank God they changed the bang, bang.
I don't understand. Because that's like her name, isn't it?
Nickname? Obviously not a real name, but...
Well, people were calling her that prior
before,
to this.
Calling her what?
Nikki Bang
Nikki
Bang.
Nikki Bang Bang.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I knew that before. That. So yeah. When she said Bang Bang, I said,
well, that
hilarious.
That adds context to that quote. I like it. I'm in.
Right.
Nikki Bang Bang. And Machine Gun Annie. I like that. When Murphy referred to her as that.
I liked at the end of that, Murphy looks at Indra and is like, and we thought Dioza was a handful. I'm like, so true.
Yeah.
Like, they just... took people out of cryo and they're just getting worse and worse.
Indra and him look at each other and there's like a second pause and he just shrugs, that little Murphy mannerism shrug, like I don't know what to do with this, Indra.
Yeah, exactly.
Nikki tosses Indra, not I guess not like a compliment, but she says to her like, I know you call the shots around here or something like that, right? Because I have on my notes that like, my girl Indra has clout, what a boss.
I mean, she does.
Yeah
It's Indra, man.
Yeah. Who's going to disrespect Indra? She just composes herself so well. She's such
a
badass.
Speaking of this, I do want to talk about when Indra is talking to Maddie, I'm not into it.
I agree.
Know why she's going to this child.
We got another scene here.
Yeah, go ahead.
We got another scene to get to that. But yeah, so the next scene we have on Sanctum is Russ Hader being confronted finally one-on-one by Nelson, the leader of the Children of Gabriel.
It's hot.
Kyle, you want to get into this? I know you're a Nelson stan.
Oh, my boy Nelson. So Nelson struts into the cell with a great line of, they search me for weapons, but not too well. Whips out a huge knife, like a beast, and then proceeds to get his ass kicked.
So bad.
Like a bitch. So
it's significant that Russ Hader only had one good arm.
Yes.
And he
kicks his ass. I mean, I guess he has a good line where he says, you're too aggressive, because Russ Hader knows that he's just coming at him pure emotion.
Yeah.
And Russ Hader, nothing really phases him. So he quickly kicks his ass and then realizes that this man has a ton of emotion, a ton of anger inside of him. And immediately he's a mark. He knows that he can manipulate that emotion inside of him, which he proceeds to do.
Well, he has some leverage. He just has to get the point across that it's not Russell in this body anymore. And this is the first thing he says, like, after the fight when he has him pinned to the ground is, don't be ashamed. If Russell was here, I have no doubt you would have killed him. And Nelson's like, what do you mean? You are Russell. So Shade Hader just reveals, or Russ Hader reveals that, you know, I killed Russell's mind. Now I occupy his body. And I also like how he says, don't tell me that Gabriel didn't teach you guys the mind drives. Mm-hmm. I don't want to waste what time we have.
He condescends the entire conversation.
Shade Hader is Nelson's daddy at this point.
Yeah,
it's
fucking sad.
Oh,
I hate
God.
It.
Nelson is beat now.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. He's totally beat.
He's just kind of, he beat him down like a little puppy dog.
He really did.
Sad to see.
It was tough. I think he's going to be what in Russ Hader's inner circle going forward.
I'm glad I wasn't on the last episode with the bank he'll marry, because I was totally going to marry Nelson and like talk him up as like this loyal, strong man. And then his first scene the next episode, he gets bitch slapped around and now he's just a lapdog.
Well, Indra kind of shuts him down in the beginning. I think it could have gone two trajectories. Nelson kind of goes up to Indra in the beginning when Indra's dealing with the grounders who are protecting or whatever, Russ Hader, and he gets shut down, so then he has to take matters into his own hands.
Yeah.
He goes with the aggressive emotions, and then he gets taken over.
I mean, he's been fairly reasonable.
Sure.
with the demands of Indra and One Crew mm-hmm. of, like, staying calm, like, not doing anything crazy, and then obviously just hits a breaking point.
I think this is a good time to discuss. So, Russ Hayda kind of explains the mind drives to him, like, mansplains it to him, kind of saying two minds can't exist in one yeah. body. I killed Russ Hayda. So, or Russell. So, do we think that we kind of had a good discussion before this. So, Shade Hayda was in Maddie for a while. So, Maddie, while Maddie was living and breathing in Sanctum, he was learning everything there is to learn about the factions, who these people are, what their culture is, etc. Do we think that while the seconds he was in Russell before he kills him, that's the only knowledge he has of Sanctum? Or do we think that he has somehow more knowledge? Because more so, earlier in the episode, Maddie is drawing the anomaly, which she's never seen. So it's kind of like, it all kind of ties together with why do either of these people know these things when they take the mind drive out? Does that affect what they know?
It's because Becca Promheda knew about it.
Right. Well, we'll get
I'm
into
just
the...
kidding.
Well, no, I'm going...
My brain just exploded.
No, so I have a point with that. If do you want to talk about her drawing the anomaly now, or do you want to get to that when we get to that scene?
I'm okay with getting it when we talk about the scene.
Okay.
Okay, so skip that part.
Yeah,
and go
so
back
right
to...
now, I mean, I think that pretty much confirms that. Like, we asked a couple... I specifically asked a couple episodes ago, yeah. Is Russell still around?
And I thought that he had all of Russell's memories, but I think that that confirms that he does not have
Russell's
memories.
I just think it confirms that Russell's definitely gone.
Oh, like, 1,000%.
Yeah. But we were wondering, he killed, like, the original Russell
yeah.
Lightborn.
Right.
I just mean, it's really fucking hard to pretend to be somebody else. It just is, especially on a different world. You're
yeah.
fucking a grounder on Earth, and now you're going to goddamn a moon planet somewhere
yeah,
else?
Fuck.
You think you could just... settle in and be like, all
well,
right, I'm
I don't,
he's
here
not
too.
Trying
yeah,
very hard
say,
to
yeah,
play
yeah,
Russell.
Yeah,
he's like dropping very
I
articulate
right.
ground crew speak, and then he just played it off like Indra told me a few phrases.
Yeah, I mean,
he's
even,
being sassy.
No,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
even
I
when
it,
he's
though.
Definitely not trying to play Russell, even when he went into the place where where Murphy was getting held, he's just showing his power and his
mm-hmm.
strength. He's not.
Okay, I agree, but for a whole few episodes, he was convincing Trey and Alyssa to do things.
No, I'm fine. I understand
yeah, but those
that.
People, but people that love you that much aren't hard to convince.
They're fanatics.
Blind
I think,
faith.
Yeah, they're just going to follow him.
I'll take that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think my personal take is, yeah. I mean, he was basically Maddie all last season. So that's
true.
More time for him. I mean, granted, she was kind of chained to a bed, but
yeah,
it's time for him to learn things more than just being in Russell's body, I guess.
Yeah.
So wrapping up this Russ Hayda and Nelson scene, Russell starts to maneuver and cater favor with Nelson, essentially acknowledges that he's pretty sure that the Allegius criminals were the ones that took the guns. And then he says, you and the prisoner share an enemy and perhaps even the same goal. And that goal is to just gain power. Nelson tries to say he wants justice. He says it twice. And then Russ Hayda says, don't make me repeat myself. Sit your ass down. You want power, not justice. And then he finally says, you make allies with the murderers and thieves, and then you take out the enemy's queen. That's got to be Clark, yes?
I mean, it fades right into Clark. But
right.
is that too obvious?
No, that's...
No.
that's
but who else could he be talking about?
Exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So...
The next episode is called
Or is
Queen's
it Indra, though?
Too, so.
Thank God.
It is.
Thank God.
Well, either way,
him,
he's
he
saying
I mean,
take out one crew.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he's
mm-hmm.
saying.
Yeah. Because I'm thinking, he doesn't know what Clark's up to. Indra doesn't know what Clark's up to because Gaia never made it back. Because Indra's
yeah.
like telling Maddie it's okay, but in reality, she has no fucking idea what's going on.
Right.
That was yeah. a little tangent, but.
Sure. We go with that Russ Hayda Nelson scene?
Yeah.
We are.
Yeah,
okay.
Unfortunately.
Moving on. Moving on, we have Maddie at school.
Maddie at school. It's nice
Yay.
To see her at school.
It is nice to see her at school, and there's a little person who kind of looks like a young Jasper and a young Monty, and
I
maybe she's
it.
Playing the Clark, you
yeah.
know.
It's a nice pickup, I like that.
There's some parallels, and then Indra walks up and real world hits real quick.
So let's jump in. So she's drawing the anomaly. What do you guys think that means?
Okay, so obviously this is going to be a thing. You know, it's been brought up a few times.
It's the second time
we've seen think, that. First of all, I think Maddie's story right now is just weird. I think it's bizarre because, you know, I guess the whole thing, we were wondering, like, why isn't she showing up? And then they were saying, oh, she's unwell. Well, I mean, I guess you can say that now they're saying she was unwell just because Clark doesn't want her around anyone because she wants her to be a kid. But, you know, she just hasn't been around, whatever. I guess she's just letting her be a kid. She's drawing the anomaly, you know, and that's obviously not anything she should be able to draw, right? We're guessing that she's getting these pictures, these visions, or whatever she's drawing from ex-commanders, still being in her head.
Yep.
Well, now we know that there is an anomaly stone. And who was the first commander? On Earth, I'm sorry.
Becca.
Yep.
Becca. And Becca, we're going to say, knew about it.
You going to say that?
I'm going to say
that. You don't look me in the eyeball and say that?
I'm willing to agree with that.
Yeah, I mean,
so if Becca is Becca's a commander in her head and she's going to draw the anomaly stone from Earth, I would say Becca knew about it.
So,
Brian, jump
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I kind of want to get into that. I just had a thought, and you guys are going to have to indulge me. So what the flame was just an improved version of this original AI that was Allie.
It's Allie 2, right?
It's Allie 2.0, yeah. And the thing that Becca did to fix the original Allie was kind of make it so that the flame, which is Allie 2.0, merges with the organism that is it is implanted into. So it kind of merges with their nervous system. So I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that once you have the flame in you, some of its knowledge and some of its, you know, predecessors, you know, information sticks with you. And I think that's what we're getting with Maddie.
I agree. Yeah. And that's why I think that if we're seeing that kind of stuff, I still think she's seeing the anomaly from Earth and it's from Becca. You know, if Becca was the one who knows, and that's what I'm guessing.
I buy that. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. We'll kind of get into it at the end, because there's a nice little callback to what one of the seven members, Luke, has been talking about all season with the second Dawn Cult.
Let's just
I think we should save that
to
the end. Yeah, but there's a point
it.
That I'm going
to
write down that I want to make.
I'm going to jump in really quick, and we can maybe cut this out, but... So when Raven didn't have the flame in her, but Raven was Allie for a second and all of a sudden could code out of her ass and like all this stuff that she wasn't able to do before and had all this knowledge. Why do we think Raven, the only person who took the chip, got this knowledge? This is a crazy question, but I'm just saying, like, Maddie, you were both saying that Maddie has this knowledge because she had the flame, but Raven also got the flame taken out of her and now... If you recall, what was her mentor's name?
Sinclair.
Sinclair was literally like, "How are you able to do this now?" And she's like, "I don't know."
She have the flame?
She didn't have the flame.
She had the flame.
Okay, there's only one flame, and that's what I said. The flame is
exactly.
An improvement
I think it tracks with you that mm-hmm. Raven was able to keep this knowledge.
Did she keep it? Like,
she could do a crazy amount after they literally took it out of her head. Her battling Allie in the season 3 finale on code was because of the knowledge she got through taking the chance.
End of season 6, yeah. Too, right? End of season 6 is when she, like, gets Shade Hada and, like, uploads it to the computer. Isn't she fucking around with that?
Yeah, like,
I could be way off base.
If you were to rewatch the season, I guess, wait. Yeah, it is 3 finale. They are blatantly saying to her, like, how can you do this now?
Yeah.
Like, this is something you've never... been able to do, and now you could do it.
I never picked up that stuck with her. I thought that she was just always recognized as probably the best coder,
most
advanced.
I'll rewatch
that.
And clarify on the next episode.
I mean, residual effects? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Indra walks up to Maddie playing school, unless you guys have any more points about what Maddie was drawn. Indra walks up, and essentially, I actually have a full quote here. She says, "Listen, Maddie, Sanctum is on edge. Our guns were stolen, nearly 50 guns, over 2,000 rounds. I can't get them back unless all of one crew is with me. Maddie, we need our commander. I know you don't want this. I don't want this for you." And I love this part of it. "There are forces at play here that are greater than our wants, responsibilities that we must yield to. Nobody understands this more than Clark does." Because Maddie says, well, what about Clark? What would she say? She's like, Clark would get it.
Possibly a little foreshadowing, too, for the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't like this at first because my initial reaction was, why is Indra coming to, like, vent her issues to Maddie?
Yeah, I agree.
When they've been trying. I mean, I guess Indra hasn't been on Team Protect Maddie, but Maddie is so clearly not the commander at this point. But I guess in Indra's head, she doesn't have a choice, A, and B, Indra still sees her as the commander, so she has that level of respect for her.
Well, this is coming right off of the heels of the conversation Indra had with Russell, wherein Russell said there's only three people that have this claim, and in Indra's head, those are the three candidates for the next commander, and if it's not Russell, it's either Maddie or Clark. Clark's not there, so Maddie's the next person up, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point.
In her head, she's backed into a quarter. That's her only
option.
Right,
she's running out of time, too. She can't wait for Clark at this point. Maddie's really the only option.
Yeah. That's why she's trying to level with her and treat her like an adult. Like, listen, Maddie, this is bigger than us. Like, you have to step up to the plate. We don't really have a choice. I wouldn't come to you if I didn't have to because I don't want this for you, but you got to do this.
I kind of wish there was some sort of reaction going on in between the different groups being like, where are these people? Where's Bellamy? Where's Clark? There's no mention. It's more like I think the reason we're so ick about her going up to Maddie, a child, is because if they were to say Clark's nowhere to be found, we don't know where she is, we have to just deal with this, I think it would maybe lead it better. I don't know.
Yeah, I even had it, like, I wrote down, it was a really weird juxtaposition with the, like, kids playing soccer scene right into, like, Indra just unloading all of this stuff onto Maddie.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, like, a lot of the issues you're saying from earlier, at least, are the time dilation stuff. So time hasn't really been going for them. It's not been that long, you know? So, you know, what do they think Clark's doing? They just said she's going to go talk to our Flanders, right?
Yeah. It's been multiple days, though, hasn't it? On both?
Well, I mean,
oh, I guess, I
it's
don't
at
know.
Least the next day, because that was nighttime
oh,
when they met
point,
up.
Yeah.
So it's at least saying, just mentioning that it's been days for Bellamy, at least. Like,
right.
People should be concerned.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because they don't know where the fuck they are.
Well, the only people that would be overly concerned with Bellamy are gone, too.
True.
Yeah, I mean, Indra literally is like, I gotta keep this shit together. That's what she's thinking about. I mean, she is, obviously, in her head, she's like, okay, you know, where's Clark? You know, I hope she's okay. But no, right now, she's gotta keep this shit together, you know?
Clark burned an entire place down. I think I would say, okay, where's Clark?
She no one's asking, decisions. Like, where's that blonde bitch that burned down the palace? Like,
exactly.
I don't know. I get it is a little tough with the time dilation, though.
Yeah,
because we got confirmation last episode, two episodes ago, that Bardo... Time on Bardo moves slightly quicker than it does on Alpha Sanctum rather. So I guess technically, yeah, it might not have been that long. But Clark's the fucking main character. You're not thinking, like, where the hell's the main character at?
Well, why haven't we been saying that for six episodes straight? We kind of have. Where the fuck's the main character, Clark? Where's she at?
Indra's like, listen, Maddie, the main character's not here.
Yeah. I'm the fucking main character
due to
now.
Budgetary reasons. No, at least she was in it this episode.
My goodness. So anyway, we are about to get to a great scene here, and we started off, it's Indra grooming Maddie and pushing her onto stage in front of all of Wan crew. You know, she's got the armor on, and she's, like, getting her hyped up, trying to get her to go out on stage in front of Wan crew and, you know, assume the role of commander. And Jackson comes in, followed by Murphy and Amori, and says, this isn't gonna work. Look at Maddie, she's terrified. Like, she's not ready for this. This isn't gonna work.
John Murphy, champion of the young and afraid.
Truly. It's funny. I think that they didn't even need Miller in this. Murphy could have just stood in the way. Miller just seems...
Well, it's Jackson.
Sorry. Jackson. I don't like Jackson. Just not a fan. So whenever he's kind of in it, I'm like, he's being very whiny recently. But yeah. Murphy
Amori could have expressed the same concern that he did.
Exactly. But, I mean, regardless, Murphy to the rescue.
Yeah.
And just his quick wit and, like,
I know.
He's being heroic on his own.
Yeah.
He didn't even need to get involved, but he does. He's growing.
He took the words right out of my fucking mouth, too, when he basically said, like, Indra. Like,
well, Indra breaks it down. This is the first time she reveals what she knows. She said, it's not Russell anymore. Shade Hata is in Russell, like... You know, there's this whole flame thing, Sangeeta crew would go to his side, and then everybody else would follow suit. I've seen it happen before. We gotta stop this. Maddie's the only option. And then Murphy says, no, like, Indra, who's been taking charge the past few years? And he said,
you know, me and Amori weren't in the bunker, but I don't think it takes a genius to figure out who was running things while Octavia was painting her face with blood. Like, Indra, this is you. This is your time.
I love that part, especially because first watching it, the scene with Nikki Bang Bang in the saloon when she mentions, Nikki says something like, I know you call the shots around here, something like that. And I was like, damn, like, Indra really has been kind of the face of one crew for every political group in Sanctum. And I wrote down right there, I was like, Indra is my vote for Haida right now because she has respect for the traditions. She's a face everyone knows. She's willing to do what's necessary. All caps. She's strong. She's willing to listen and speak before she takes drastic action. And also, her being commander is a great way for her to connect with Gaia, because they've been having various issues with their relationship.
That's a sweet last one.
So I was hype as shit when this scene started going down. When I started realizing, like, this is happening, like, the music starts to come in a little bit, I started getting goosebumps. I was literally tearing up.
You were probably like Murphy. Murphy says, ask Indra, can we watch? She said, no. And then she walks away like badass, and Murphy's like, yeah, I'm going to watch.
Hell yeah.
And Amori kind of like shuffle in behind her. But yeah, then we get Indra addressing Wan Crew. And she says, first thing she says is, there are no more commanders, but make no mistake, I am in command.
Fuck yes,
so
dude.
Dope.
She just commands the room.
Yeah,
Kyle
she
Bryan,
is
I'm
the
assuming
best.
This
better
is
word.
One of your favorite. This is the moment
yeah,
you're talking
this
about?
Yeah, this scene was when I mentioned the beginning of the episode that I think this scene with the combo of the hallway moving into the room and everything that happens is definitely my favorite scene of the season so far. Emotionally, holy shit. I was tearing up, goosebumps, like standing up, like hype as hell while this was happening, and then contrasting it with, I guess you would think would be the most emotional scene is the Dio's at Hope reunion, and it just like didn't
True.
Compare at
okay,
all.
Okay, I understand that.
Yeah, I loved it. All about it. What a speech.
Big speech.
So, of course, it wouldn't be a good scene unless somebody opposed her just stepping up to be the commander. And we have Knight, who is the voice of Sangeeta crew, and says, you betrayed us, you lied to us, now you ask to lead us? To which she says, I'm not asking.
I'm not asking, bitch. I
and
love it.
Knight unsheaths his sword, and then Indra just looks to her right, grabs this pointy spear thing, and she kicks his ass. Like, oh. it was no contest. It was, like, three exchanges. He's on his... Yeah. It was awesome. It was just unadulterated awesome.
An ass-kicking.
It was.
A true ass-kicking. Yeah.
And then, I mean, even to add salt onto Knight's wound, she walks away, turns back, disgustedly looks down at his body.
Oh, she's got a full monologue.
Go ahead.
She
I want to live it again.
We are one crew, not separate clans. We rose from the ashes of the bunker and flew across the stars to find a new home. There are threats here that will defeat us if we fail to remember that. And then as she's walking away, she turns back and says, Knight, you're in charge of getting the missing guns back from the prisoners. And just, she rolls on out. Boom.
So good.
Wan Crew is back. We got a commander. I'm in. I'm fully invested in this.
Yeah, I love it. Obviously, I'm getting ahead of myself when I'm talking about it. I love it so much. I am so team Indra as commander.
There is no more flame, so...
I'm surprised this happened, though. It's an obvious choice, and I'm down for it. But my thoughts were Rus Haida was going to take control of Wan Crew because...
Oh, well... Wait and see.
Yeah, so, it's definitely could still
and
happen.
I agree, but Indra becoming commander of them makes it, I don't know how he's gonna infiltrate.
Well, you know what?
Now.
Something that I just thought of and didn't even notice until now was Russell alluded to earlier that he's gonna maneuver to align himself with the Allegius prisoners who have the guns. If Knight specifically was put in charge of getting the guns back, he's going to be by himself dealing with the prisoners who are going to be dealing with Russell. He might not be having Indra with him while he's face-to-face with
that's
Russell.
That's a really,
so where
really,
do his
really
allegiances
good point.
Lie? That said, you know, that's just a point I
Damn.
Thought of.
I like that.
That's yeah, good. Yeah, that's like really
that
good.
Too. That could be a
that makes a lot of sense.
Could be a
and then in the words of our boy Hatch, I mean, I'm with the guys with the guns.
Oh,
what does he say? Yeah. That
was
a little butcher, but basically you get the point. I'm going to take the guys with the guns.
Yeah, but then Clark's going to come back, and as he said, the other guns.
The only way this thing works is if you're willing to pull the trigger.
Oh! stop. Speaking of Clark, right? We good to...
Yeah, that was our last scene. So yeah, we are good to start on our Nakara arc, which, I'm going to be honest, this is the arc that none of us wanted. They shoved it down our throats. We dealt with it, you know.
A point I thought about randomly was that the issue with this arc for us is that it just seems like they're just doing random shit.
Filler.
Yeah, because they could very easily just pop to Bardo. They have the capabilities to do it, technically, so they kind of have to put them on this wild goose chase.
To preface this, my rationale for them even including this was that there are how many planets in the planetary system? Are there
seven,
five or six?
I think it's six.
And what they said before they made the jump was that they didn't specifically know which planet was which, and their plan right now is to just planet hop and see which one was the one they were looking for. So this was them just, you know, crossing out their options of places that they could go. That's what I... And in the first scene, we'll get to it, but by the end of this episode, they have a better idea of how they're going to be able to get to Bardo, more specifically.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's... They were jumping into the wormhole randomly to a planet. It happened to be this crappy one where nothing was really going on, and we're just going to have to deal with it.
Something's going on.
Nakara, I mean, we're obviously going to get into it, but the whole Nakara sequence, besides Clark and Raven and the end revelation, there's nothing to it that I care about.
Bro, we have a good Nyla joke.
Don't say the cool joke isn't good Nyla joke. You have to say that.
Did she tell any other jokes? That was a good... No, it wasn't a good joke.
Yeah,
I can't believe that made it through. I think this is where a lot of the corny stuff came from, and I think it's because
Jordan is cornball town. His first line this season was like, I think I'm going to bring him more than his morning coffee. Shut up, Jordan.
The squad kind of gets that vibe with Jordan, too, because like everything he says basically gets shot down immediately.
Yeah. So they land on Nakara. Nyla says, oh, it's pretty cool. And immediately they find a dead body. I think it's Miller, you know, someone steps on it, and they find out that Nakara is an ossuarium, which is a word I've never heard, and it's a place that somebody else is storing their dead bodies. But they kind of brush off the snow, and they see a symbol of, it looks like a rising bird or something, and I don't know,
from
a phoenix.
The ashes.
From the
ashes we will rise.
But yeah, so they see this symbol, they realize that this is an ossuarium, and Raven uses her Bardo suit to locate the nearest stone, which appears to be located within a cave. So they go off to this opening in a cave. And that's all for the first scene. The next scene,
through a butthole.
I mean, not realizing it at first.
At the time, we didn't know, but now we know the claustrophobia tunnel is a butthole.
Yeah, a nice little throwaway line with the, I guess it wasn't a throwaway line, but someone asked, like, what's that smell?
Yeah, it was Miller,
exactly.
Yeah.
In this really quick scene, the two groups that we have get separated. Raven and Clark are split off from Miller, Nyla, and Jordan.
Who shouldn't have been there in the first place, let's be honest. Like, how random did they feel?
Yeah, they're gonna
die. Nyla specifically.
I would say two of three of them are going to die, and we've already covered that Miller has exhausted his story arc, and that would be a satisfying death. I think Nyla is unfortunately just expendable, kind of. Jordan, I think, is sticking around.
One of my notes is literally like, they should have killed somebody this episode if they were going to make it worth it. Because they get separated. Clark and Raven are in one part of the tunnel, and the other three, I'm like, that could close off, and my view of the show would not change. I'd be like, okay, cool. Three good deaths.
The two things I yelled were, these three are going to die, and then, oh my god, are they going to kiss? Raven and Clark, they're totally going to kiss.
Kathleen is rubbing off on you.
The whole community is. Everybody ships everybody in the 100 community.
That's the best part.
It really is. So that's really all it is for that scene. They get separated. The next scene we have is Clark and Raven having a long overdue heart-to-heart.
Good acting, too, from both of them, specifically Lindsay Morgan, mm-hmm. and it's really emotional. So this is the scene we've been waiting for since... Raven, quote-unquote, pulled the lever on Hatch and the rest of them, and then the eight Bardo people. So she killed 12 people?
I sent 4 people to die and killed another
8 for good measure.
For good measure. So that's 12 people she's killed in the span of, like, the last 48 hours.
And it's funny, because even in her speech to Clark saying, like, you just go on business as usual, whatever it is, it still kind of seemed like she was throwing shade at Clark, being like, how the fuck do you just kill all these people and be Gucci with
them? Well, I disagree. I think that she finally had to do it herself, and she said, how do you, like, live with yourself?
I agree. I'm
beaten. Like, how do you make it work? Yeah. Because she understands, like, Clark was, her hand was forced to do these things, which she never experienced firsthand. And now that she has, she understands that it was necessary to do, but she can't, like, deal with her own emotions. And it was a tip of the cap to Clark. Like, how do you do it? I want to be like that.
Yeah.
She uses the words, my soul is fractured, which is, that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
That's a pretty really devastating hardcore description of, like, a mental state.
To which you said this quote, Clark responds by saying, the people we've killed, we killed to save the people we love. And Raven responds with, well, those people loved other people too. You know, they had loved ones. What makes us better than them?
Clark doesn't really have a response to it, does she?
No, she's taken aback by it,
but
actually.
But I like, because Raven said, I could have welded it. I was scared. And I think that was the vulnerable breakdown moment that we needed between them, because no one admits that on this show. No one admits, like, hey, I did this. Clark pulls a lever and it's like, well, no one else was gonna fucking do it. I had to do this.
That's like her role.
Raven was
kind
of the first person to be like, well, I could have fucking did it, but I was scared, so I sent this other guy to do it. That's like real.
Yeah, because I mean, Murphy actually tells her during that scene, like, go do it, you can do it. And she's like, no, I can't, I'm too busy pulling the, you know, keeping everything fine with the temperature.
Yeah, she does say that. She's like, I'm controlling everything, which is probably true as well, and Raven's just beating herself up harder than.
Damn, in hindsight, would we be that pissed if Hatch continued to be a main character and Raven got the axe that episode?
I would have thrown the fuck up if they killed Raven that way. I would have thrown up. If Raven's gonna die, it needs to be something bigger than a random, like, radioactive.
Yeah, I mean, that was a random conflict that they
had. Yeah, no, it needs to be. She's not going to die. Raven can't die because they haven't given her enough to make her death that epic. Like,
That's what you think. If
Raven dies, there wasn't any peak for Raven, I don't think. And I hate to say that. That makes me sad, but I don't think.
Shit.
Raven's been a steady, good character, I would say. She's, like, up until recently, has been the moral compass of the group, at least one of them. Like, she's been the do-gooder.
I agree, but picture this. Clark dying right now. Clark has done so many epic, insane things. If she does one last badass thing to die, it's like, that's our girl. But if Raven did it, okay. Right?
Yeah, shit, that's a good point.
Like, sure.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Shit, I might have thrown up too then.
Yeah, exactly.
So the heart-to-heart, they have it. It's great. And the digestive tract of this organism that they're in just randomly shifts. And not only are the two groups, it shifts so that the two groups are back together again, but also there's an opening leading right to the stone. So it's all very convenient. I don't know. I don't think Nakara is going to play that big of a role in the overarching story.
No.
And our last scene of the episode, and in Nakara, is them kind of trying to input the coordinates in the stone. Raven is having trouble deciphering the map because she was attacked by that spider beast earlier, and the helmet kind of got all cracked and stuff. This is where Miller finds.
Yeah, Miller looks at dead body. I believe it's a body. There's a symbol on a piece of cloth,
which Nyla identifies as the Second Dawn.
Yeah, which is great for us, because 7-member Luke has been saying for at least 4 episodes now that the Second Dawn is going to come back and play a big part with the disciples, the origin of the disciples, how they got from Earth to Bardo, and I mean, shit.
It's validation right
this,
there. Confirmation.
We've been getting closer and closer to this theory since we dropped it on episode 2, I think it was, and it's about confirmed at this point.
Yeah.
That the Second Dawn will be playing a part, like a massive role in this, is confirmed. I think we can go down the rabbit hole, and, you know, theories go as far as Bill Cadogan, who was the original leader, is this infamous preacher that
Who killed Becca Brumhada.
Yeah, that's being worshipped on Bardo.
Who held the original flame.
What a journey.
Right, so real quick, I'll throw the next theory out. We're going to go back to Maddie. Okay?
Yeah.
So we're going to confirm here that Second Dawn is a thing. And who killed Becca?
Bill Cadogan.
There you go. So she, I'm going to go ahead and say that she was killed because she knew about the stone and didn't want to use it the same way that they did. And that's just going to be my reasoning again why, you know, Maddie has that, you know, Becca knows about the stone. That's why she's killed. Maddie knows about the stone because she had the flame in her. And Becca was a commander.
Just to clarify, this is the stone on Earth. And when Becca was taken out by Bill Cadogan, she had just landed on Earth in the fallout of the nuclear holocaust, if you will. Yeah, I think there's a lot of weight to that theory.
Right. Vindication for Bingetown TV, I think.
Hell yeah.
I just want it like nothing. There's been nothing that's made me question it. There's only been things that make me want to believe it more.
Yep. Agree.
Fake podcasts are just now coming out with that theory. We were saying it weeks ago. Just going to say.
Absolutely.
So, as we move forward, Raven finally gets the helmet to cooperate, and she identifies the corresponding planet code of the insignia that we saw at the beginning of the episode when they first landed on Nakara and uncovered that dead body. This insignia of the rising bird is identified in her helmet, and she types in the coordinates to go to that planet, which we can safely assume is Bardo because the dead body that they found had the tattoos on the face. So I have to assume that Squad is on its way to Bardo.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
Hopefully them walking in all at different times doesn't have any implications. Hopefully they're on the same time dilation. I would assume since they keep their dead there that they travel there kind of not often but enough that if someone has to go and drop a body that they're not gonna come back and
they could just toss it through, don't you think?
Oh,
just
yeah,
a little
you're
heave-ho
right,
and
guess,
just like
yeah.
little what
no because
then
Gimli
troll toss
would be piled right the fuck there
but the digestive liquid the
I
digestive
guess,
enzymes
yeah.
yeah
let me
I don't know we don't know
I just want to say moving forward I wrote down the crews and the different factions we have just because there's so many. So we have one crew and then besides that, Clark and company, because they basically say, like, Clark and them are not one crew. They weren't in the bunker, etc.
Right.
So that's different groups. Children of Gabriel, the Faithful, Allegius Criminals, old extinct Bardoans, and then the Second Dawn cult slash Disciples. There's so many different groups of people.
Are
it's
we already calling them Second Dawn slash the Disciples?
Well, I have,
hell yeah, brother!
I have Second Dawn cult slash, in parentheses, those are the Disciples.
Hell yeah, we're going all in on this.
Yeah,
yeah
but
I'm
there's seven different squads going on right now. One crew and Clark and Company should be the same, but technically they're not.
I guess Arcadians.
Control. Yeah, it's just
well,
out of control.
She mentions that Murphy and Amori are Arcadians, right? Because she says like the other Arcadians are in there, like join up with them.
Yep.
And quickly going back to what you were saying about the time thing. I mean, I thought that we established that the stone, if you use the stone, it doesn't matter when you go in, you're still going to show up there. You guys, they show up together when you type in the code, right?
Mm-hmm.
Weren't you saying you don't want them to? Yeah. Yeah. Only if you walk into the anomaly.
No, see, I was thinking, no. For me, in my head, the time dilation, if you walk in at separate times, it has to do with the literal time in which planet you're going to. If you're going to a slower or faster time dilation.
Correct. That's why it took Dioza experienced 3 months on Skyring between her walking into the anomaly on Sanctum and Octavia following her literally 5 seconds
because
later.
They were going to a faster
right, but I thought
it's planet.
Different if it's using the stone.
No, I don't think planetary and time dilation, I don't think it has to do. I think using the stone changes just the properties of how you're going and the healing of the arm and can you bring guns and all that different stuff, but to me, no.
I don't have much to say on
that. I'm honestly, now that you guys talked about it, I'm a little confused.
We'll look it up.
Pause.
No, we don't
we'll be good. We'll be good. I want to just stick a pin in that. We'll do our research and we'll give you a nice stone breakdown on the next episode. That wraps up our Nakara arc officially. Do we have any last thoughts on that?
No.
I'm going to leave you with, I think we had two very good arcs in this episode, and then one, the Nakara one, that just kind of felt, you know, it had to happen. But yeah, that's our episode.
Okay, well, I have a marry, fuck, kill for you guys. We're going to do marry, bang, kill, marry with Bardo.
The planet?
Alpha and Beta. The storylines in general. You got to...
Oh, the storylines or the physical planets?
No,
like
you got
when
the
Rick just impregnated that planet
so far,
in season 4 of Rick
and
Morty?
In this single moment.
Wow. Okay. I can start.
And you got to think about the people, too. Yeah. We'll go with who's currently on what right in this moment. And we're going to say that Clark and them are on Alpha.
Well, nobody's on Beta at this moment.
Mm, that's a good
So is it the storylines of the entire...
I mean, it should be Nakara, Bardo, and Alpha.
Okay, sure.
Right?
Nakara, yeah. Bardo, and Alpha. That's hard.
Gut reaction is Nakara's got to go. Yeah. But that's Clark and Raven.
Yeah, I agree, though.
Shit.
If anything this season has taught us, we don't need them. Sorry.
Okay, I know what I'm doing. So I am going to marry Bardo because I like what's going on there a lot. Some great characters. Some great fighting, so I'm down with that. I'm going to bang Sanctum because Sanctum just rocked my world this episode with that intro scene. And then, unfortunately, I'm going to have to kill Nakara and let Clark and Raven go.
Yeah, I'll go, and I'm going purely by characters here. I'm going to marry Bardo.
I knew I liked you, Jimmy.
I think at this point, like, Octavia, even Hope, Dioza, like, they're doing it for me this season, you know? I'm killing Nakara. I mean, it's crazy because I love Raven, and I love Clark, obviously. But to me, everyone else is expendable. I want to prove that Clark doesn't need to be the key, you know? Someone else can take care of this. And then, you know, after this episode, I mean, even character-wise, Russ Hayda is all J.R. Bourne, my boy, you know, I'm banging them, you know? So I'll bang Sanctum.
Okay, so I'm going to kill Nakara because the storyline, you know, it was quick. It was nothing. I didn't really enjoy it. And, you know, I'm just going to kill that. I'll leave it at that. I agree. Indra stepped up today as, you know, a former tertiary character accepting this main role. And yeah, we don't need Clark anymore. No. Oh, Kyle, you were offended by that. No, we do need Clark. We love Clark. I am going to marry Sanctum, aka Alpha, because that's where our OG1 crew is from. We've been following them from the beginning. We have the chemistry with these people. I'm invested, fully invested in their strife and their problems, and also Russ Hayda is low key becoming one of my favorite characters. So I'm pretty into that. And I'm gonna bang Bardo because, like Kyle said, there's just some raw, passionate fight scenes going on there. We're having a lot of big emotional reveals of characters being reunited. So yeah, I'll bang Bardo.
Yeah, I'm going with Kyle and Jimmy, and I'm gonna kill Nakara. Although this entire time I was trying to think of reasons to not do it because of Clark, and you know I'm a Clark girl. Everybody is, but oh my god. So,
OG Klexa stan.
Big time. So yeah, I'm gonna kill Nakara. I'm gonna bang Sanctum and Alpha because I love Indra and Murphy. They're so good, but this season has been perfect for me, and it's because of Bardo, so I'm gonna marry Bardo. There you go.
I love it. Any last thoughts, or are we good here?
Good.
This was a passionate pod episode from us.
A little bit of alcohol during this one. I think that
yeah, that'll,
something
that'll
to do
always
with
help.
It.
Just a dash.
For the record, like, I feel like I was trashing it a little bit, but I still love it even when there is some corny plot holes and stuff that to be addressed.
We critique it because we love it.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. That's why we're covering the show right now. We love its little corny, quirky stuff. Yeah, we love it. And like me and Kyle said, this episode may have had the best scene of the season, so you know I'm not gonna throw too much shade on this, but anyway, guys, we're gonna be following season 7 of The 100 weekly with a podcast after every episode. Next up is episode 7 titled Queen's Gambit. If you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.